Hi, I'm Tim Moody, President and CEO of Pandrival Resources. We're primarily a copper exploration company. We have a great pipeline of projects, including Advanced Discovery, another new discovery that we're working up, and I'm sure we're going to make many more discoveries in the near term.
Tim, good to see you. It's been a while since I've seen you. You've been sort of getting stuck into the weeds with Merlin on the technicals and so forth. Look, I wanted to catch up because it's a really kind of, looks like the beginning of quite a strong copper environment. It's very, you know, strong gold environment, and also tin. So I want to sort of see how you guys are getting on. And I just want to talk about sort of the kind of the commerciality of the project and how you kind of advance these things and kind of get that reaction in the market. But first, look, I'll start with the recent news, which I'm a bit late to the game on, which is obviously the tin side of things and what that does for the business. What can you tell me?
Yeah, well, look, I think the tin metallurgy results, well, we saw a good reaction in the share price. We saw a good movement there for a period of time. I guess that was on the back of tin looking healthy again, but also it meant that there were eyes on Pandrival as a copper company, and say the copper tin being seen as a positive addition to our project, which is obviously approaching a resource as well. So I think in the technical side of the aspects of the tin metallurgy, they were great results. So given that it's our second commodity after copper, we were getting premium grade concentrate and excellent recoveries, top of the range, when you compare to, say, other deposits where tin is the primary commodity. So really excellent results. It will make a strong positive addition to the economics. And this comes down to impacting the cutoff grades we can apply, etc. But really, really positive news. And obviously, tin's a good commodity to be in.
Right. Okay. So, and what I'm trying to sort of clear up or maybe help myself and other investors looking at this understand is how those economics actually flow into the company and how you kind of manage what you look for through the drill bit, what you're looking to be able to present when you get around to, you know, that maiden resource and PEA, okay? Because it's starting to sound like a polymetallic story rather than a pure play copper story, and I want to make sure I understand that. So, like, we have talked in the past about how you build companies for the big boys. You know, as an explorer, you've got to kind of set yourself up for either someone coming in with a ton of money for you or buying you or, you know, taking this over in some sort of JV type structure. Remind me what you set out to try to build here, if you don't mind. What is it that the big boys are going to be looking at as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, well, look, we've already got plenty of eyes on us. We know that. We've had confidentiality agreements in place. We've had approaches and, you know, there are eyes on us. So we know that we've got something of interest. And I firmly believe we've got a pretty unique patch of ground here that we're going to make. Not only one, we've got one discovery, it's very advanced, 180 drill holes, it's still growing. You know, that is, yeah, hopefully a significant discovery in its own right. So I think the way I'm approaching this is that if we, one, we can just continue to progress this on our own as a development project. But secondly, if we want to compete with some of the other bigger mines in the area, we need to make a number of discoveries. So all of the big mines, operating mines in the area, and basically clusters of deposits. Yeah, they're not reliant on one body of mineralization. They have three, four, five of these bodies. So yeah, that's the significance of our second discovery, Kenyatta Honda. We've now got two, and we've got a lot of other targets, as you know, where I think we're going to make additional discoveries. So that's one is go down the track of, you know, moving our own project forward as we're going to be a developer. Secondly, if we want to compete with the bigger companies, make additional discoveries, so we've got a cluster. And by doing that, that will just increase the appeal from the bigger companies in what we're doing, what we've got, makes us more of a, let's say, a takeover target. And then the third option we have available to us is that we perhaps feed one of the other nearby mines, and we have the luxury of proximity to a couple of other new developments and probably the world's biggest VMS deposit, just 20 so kilometres away as well. So, yeah, those are three different strands we can go, and I don't really, that's sort of driving our program at the moment. So advance our main discovery, continue to try and make additional discoveries, knowing that what they could do, but then continue to move the project forward with the metallurgy work, the environmental baseline work, all of those other things, so that we are in a position to take this through to a mining permit application, etc., should we decide to do that.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting to me. So that's always been the case, isn't it? You haven't changed your idea of that approach.
I've been talking about the concept of VMS deposits occurring in clusters, and I've drawn the analogy with, say, Nevis Gorgo, which is obviously a phenomenal deposit made up of seven different ore bodies in that cluster. And, I felt that we've always had that potential to make multiple discoveries in this area. And we're sort of demonstrating that now with two discoveries. And I think there's some of these other targets that we've got and we continue to work up ready for drilling look really excellent. So never mind, we've got that big target I've mentioned before called Bravo. We're still waiting to get access to. We don't know what it is, but if it's an ore body, it's right near La Romana. It's a very big gravity anomaly. We've got a number of things going for it. Those are the sorts of things that could really make a big difference to us. And that's the excitement of an exploration company.
Right. And so you're talking about you've got a lot of miners around. You've got Athalaya, First Quantum, Lundin, etc. What we've seen a lot of during this last 3 years, where it's been a lot of pressure on equities across the board, and not just mining, like all equities across the board, is people sort of slightly adapting the plan. So you've kind of laid out kind of three options available to you. Do some of those sort of change order in the sense that maybe finding less dilutive ways to advance the company become more important? So if you're talking about providing feed to one of the other miners in the district, do you start to look at, one of your assets more keenly and say, well, let's try and work that up to sort of see if we can do some kind of, feed to kind of get some revenue flowing, which will, fund our exploration aspirations elsewhere? I mean, have you viewed
it's
that?
It's a balance, but I think what's really driving me is how do I increase the value of the company? How do I improve the value for the shareholders? And that's the number one sort of objective. So I sort of feel that, and this is based on some feedback as well, that La Romana, our main discovery, which is getting close to being ready for resource, etc., is sort of in the bag. People have already sort of banked that. Even though it's still growing, we've grown at 25 or 30% in the last sort of 8 months. So it's still got some way to go. I lost my train of thought here.
Okay, Tim, you talked to me about providing feed to another mine. I mean, you need to be in control at all times, right? So you're assuming that they want your feed. Well, why would they? And aren't they in control of that whole conversation and therefore pricing?
There's a number of ways to look at that. One is you want to have options. If you don't have any other options, then you're backing against the wall. We're in a situation where we can move this forward as our own development, or potentially feed not just one producer, but two or three, because we've got two new developments, on our back door, and then another one, 20 or so kilometres away. Look, there has to be a reason for them to want to take our material, for that to be a realistic option. And I think we do have something. One is, in the case of, say, Los Frailes or Las Cruces, we're really, in their backyard. This is almost brownfield type distance to be feeding those mines. So, um, So that's one advantage. But secondly, which is a real leg up for us, is that we've got this great metallurgy. You know, the copper mineralization, it doesn't have any penalty elements. It's coarse grain relative to all the other producers. Those are really desirable, just two aspects that are really desirable aspects of the mineralization we've got. And we've been able to show we can produce, you know, pretty high concentrate grades and good recoveries relative to the other mines as well. So that makes it desirable ore, because all of the other mines, and I'm sure Los Fraves not going to be any different, or Las Cruces as they go underground, have to ultra-fine grind their material, and they have to deal with penalty elements. So if you've got something which is cleaner concentrate that you could potentially blend with that other mineralization, then that increases the value of what they've got as well. So I think that makes it more compelling, another reason why someone might want to, one of the nearby producers might want our mineralization, our ore.
Were there any other conclusions they came to?
There were two other main conclusions. One was being in the right jurisdiction. A good jurisdiction is obviously a big advantage. And then the other was being near to other mines. So those, if you had those features, which we do, then that should put you at the top of the pile in terms of investor choices if they want to get into a copper junior. So hopefully we're positioned such that we tick those boxes. Near term production potential, advanced project in a great location, with other producers around us.
No, just in terms of how you. I mean, the question was around how you affect your thinking as the markets change and evolve versus your current strategy, but just subtle changes like the order of play.
The other thing we realized that you make a new discovery, that's the sort of thing that could have a really big impact, a positive impact on your share price. Because then you're looking at not just one, you got times two, you make another discovery times three, and then you start to see the value of the company grow or multiply. So we recognize the importance of making additional discoveries. So I think if there's, we're not really changing our tack, we need to continue to progress La Romana, because that gives us the other options in terms of a development project for in our own right, but also is something that can feed other mines. But at the same time, if we want to make ourselves more attractive as a takeover target, but also compete with other developers in the area, we need to make new discoveries. So I think at the moment, the plan for this year was to keep one drill rig testing Kenyatta Honda, growing that, see if that's got some size potential, and I think we're showing that. And then the other was to delineate the western extension of our La Romana discovery. So,
well, look, I hear what you're saying, Tim, but here's the thing: I'm looking at your share price. It's been under some pressure in the last 12 months, and even more recently, with the good news of the tin metallurgy, etc., and then it kind of came off again. To me, it looks like there's a big seller in the market. So someone's kind of not buying into the story of set yourself up through discovery to make yourself more attractive, to drive that valuation, etc. So, I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, someone's not a buyer of this. They're obviously offloading to me.
Yeah, well, I think these things happen. As someone keeps telling me, worry about the buyers, not so much the sellers. But so that's what we're trying to do, make sure that we've got creating enough interest that there are always going to be buyers of shares. So that's really what we're focusing on. It's very difficult to know who the sellers are all the time, and there's a multitude of reasons why they might be selling. If there's a fund, I know last year there was a fund that had a change of management, so they dissolved the holding in that fund. So, they contacted us and we were able to deal with that. But that's not always the case, so we don't know. But I think this is the difficulties that the junior companies have been facing over the last 18 months haven't really gone away. We're looking at the other peers in the junior copper companies all having similar struggles at the moment. We're starting to see perhaps the market has bottomed. We're starting to see some reaction as we saw on the back of the tin metallurgy. But, we're still not got our heads above water yet in terms of seeing this positive outlook for copper really gain traction for the juniors.
I'd agree. There's a lot of pressure on it, but it's also quite easy for shareholders to jump on the board of the shorting or the naked shorting story. But the reality of the situation here is that I think we are looking at a kind of strong gold price environment, strong copper price environment. Tins, I say, gone on and run itself. And, years coming, you've got to kind of focus on those things. But specifically, I think it's important that the companies, yourselves, also remember you've kind of got to talk to the market, not just in industry. So again, I'm coming at the same question a slightly different way. Is like, do you think you need to get after and present information in a different way so that the market understands what you're about, what you could be?
Good question. We're trying to do that. Yes, look, we do have different types of audiences. Some of the institutions are a little bit different, the funds and so on, a bit different to, say, general retail. We are trying to reach all of those audiences in different ways. I don't think we can ignore any of them. That's our approach.
But what would you say if I said to you, if I kind of cornered you in a room and say, right, okay, you've got 30 seconds to tell me why this company, these projects, these discoveries are going to be commercial. What are you going to tell me that's going to get me excited?
Yeah, well, I think the deposit, the discoveries we've made, near surface open pitable potentially. Mineralization, great, good grades, etc. In an area where, it's already being demonstrated their potential to make additional discoveries. So, look, that aside, it's location, commodity. We've got the right commodity. Now you can add, as you say, commodities. If you add not only copper but tin and gold as well, both all looking very strong at the moment, and the outlook. Good as well. And then thirdly, people. We have a very experienced board, great team on the ground. I've got a lot of background, obviously, with big companies, etc., have made discoveries before. We can take this project all the way to development if we have to. So,
okay.
I think that sets us apart.
Talk to me about timing then of. Sorry to be like diving in here, but it's just like I see something good, I see it not getting the value or the appreciation. So I just want to make sure that I understand your plans of how you should position this story. But so if I look at some of the things that people are kind of crying out for, is like saying, well, okay, we need this maiden resource, we need a PEA. What do you say to them in terms of the process and the timing for delivering those things? Because those are kind of, bellwethers of how a company's doing. But are we close to doing that?
Yeah. Well, look, beginning of last year, we had 3 or 4 drill rigs turning. We've been aggressive with the drill rig for years. We've been almost drilling continuously now for, 3.5 years? But what we saw last year, we were hoping that the reaction, that by continuing to drill, coming out with good results, that we'd see a reaction in the share price and we'd be able to withstand the pressures that most of the companies were at. But it didn't. Nothing was working. So we've taken a fairly prudent approach this year in terms of being conservative with our cash, managing the money, but being ready such that when the market does start to turn around, we start to see the share price appreciate, that we can we're ready to, you know, increase the rig count again, really turn things on, and yeah, that's really what we want to do. We've got no shortage of places to drill. You know, we'd love to have 3 or 4 drill rigs going again right now.
Yeah, but explain to me, Roy. So, look, you're not the first CEO I've heard say that. And said, you know, you've talked to me over the past year, you know, 2 years, and say, we're going to be drill, drill, drill. We want to show that we're busy, you know, growing through the drill bit. Who've come to me recently and said, you know what, mess, we're not bothered. The market wasn't listening to anything that we did. I wish we'd been more conservative and prudent with the cash flow. So I don't think it's a new phenomenon, but it is definitely a new realization that perhaps the last 2 years have been pretty darn tough. But it could come back to the question with regards to reserves and PEA. Those are the things that people look to. So I get the drilling and being conservative and ready to go with the drill bit when the market, you know, starts to reward companies. But timing on those is what, you know, why would you not maybe start moving towards a resource now?
Yes, well, look, we could put a resource out today if we felt that there was the pressure to do so, the need to do so. But I think that, you know, it's always been the view of myself and the board that you when you come out with a resource, you know that that's the number that sticks in people's heads. So we don't want to come out knowing that this could grow quite a bit from where it is today. So, you know, fortunately, the number of people who are saying, oh, look, we really need you to put out your resource before we really get excited. Look, I could probably count that in one hand, the number of people have made sort of comments in that direction. So I don't feel there's people are sort of all sort of sitting on the edge of the seat. When are we going to put out the resource? When are we going to put out the resource? Look, I think whilst it's still, Larimata's still growing, and we've got another discovery that's also now starting to grow, I don't feel that we should be rushing out a resource too quickly when we feel it could grow materially from where it is today. So
okay, so it's all about scale then. It's about scale. That's your driver. We need to show this. These discoveries are big.
Yeah,
that's important for industry. That should be important for the market. So that's what you're saying.
That's it. Yeah.
Judge us by that. Okay. Fine. Interesting.
It's not as we are moving all of the other things around a resource and the PEA forward, like things like environmental baseline work. But 2 years into that, we've been doing quite detailed metallurgy. The metallurgy now is at a level adequate for pre-feasibility. Yeah, this can go straight into a PEA. It means when we put out a resource, we can have the PEA come out more or less at the same time, or very soon after. So we're already doing costing and sizing studies for a potential development. All of that work is going on. We know from the first 150-odd drill holes at Larimata that drill spacing and so on is adequate for measured and indicated. So that means that when we come out with a resource, it'll be a pretty high category. So I think it's just being patient at the moment. We'd like to delineate that west extension a bit faster. But again, why do that? Why spend all our money at a great rate of knots if we're not going to get the reaction on the share price?
Right. Okay. Have you done many conferences or roadshows or talking to investors out there, or
yes,
are you just sticking with your current shareholders?
We started in sort of January. We did a couple of weeks roadshow in both Canada and the US. We've done some online non-deal roadshows. We've also attended a number of conferences. I'll be away next week at another conference in the US, which is really interesting. It looks like we've got, it's the third time I've attended this conference, and already we've got 24 meetings over the 3 days. And this time last year, we had about sort of 18 or 19. So I suspect the number of meetings is only going to grow from here, as we saw previously. So straight after that, we've got we're attending another conference in Europe and then doing 3 days of a roadshow in a number of cities in Europe as well. So, yeah, well, we're out there. a week doesn't go by when I'm not talking to investors or funds or institutions of some sort.
Yeah, it's interesting that the battery conferences are rammed at the moment. I think the gold ones are, you know, starting to ramp up again. But it's nice to see after a couple of years where perhaps the attendance was low from companies and investors, that it feels like a better environment. And I think the Fed holding their any future rate rises for now seems that we'll see had a positive effect. We shall see. Look, Tim, look, I appreciate that, and so I sort of kind of like sort of dig into your logic and your strategy, etc. But I just think it's really important because we've seen a lot of companies kind of knee jerk and sort of segue off to other strategies because, you know, theirs wasn't working, and sometimes for the good and sometimes for the bad. But it's nice to see you continuing to succeed through the drill bit, and I say with the network as well, it kind of it's starting to look quite interesting, certainly on the economics. So.
Yeah, well, look, I continue to try and sort of maintain that, we've got a pretty, you know, exceptional piece of real estate in the Iberian Coracle Belt. We felt the potential for multiple discoveries was high when we started. Our concepts are working, our methods are working. And now, Europe having copper as a critical mineral is an advantage. And something I've been telling people, and I may not have mentioned this to you before, Matt, is that the Spanish government, particularly the Andalusian government, set up an accelerator unit to fast-track mine permitting with a sort of guaranteeing once you apply for your mining right, you'll get your license within 28 months. And that's exceptional. And if they don't, I think there's a compensation of some sort. But so I think we're at a great location, having copper and as well as gold and tin in our portfolio is a great thing. But having something that can be brought into production pretty quickly, again, sets us apart from many of the other jurisdictions around the world where people are finding copper. You know, don't expect to see some of those other discoveries in more challenging parts of the world in production, you know, in the next decade, you know. Great discoveries as they might be, some of them might take 20 years. We're not in that situation.